Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Honestly. Truthfully. I swear, I really do have a date with Johnny Versace.
I'm pleased for you.
American Crime Story returns with an exploration of the murder of Gianni Versace. But when it comes to asking why Andrew Cunanan killed Versace and four others, including himself, is there really any answer to be found? Tara Ariano and I discuss in The Blotter Presents, Episode 40. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Blotter Presents, the Previously.tv take on true crime on TV. I am joined once again by Tara Ariano. Hello, Tara.
Hi.
This week for our most wanted section, we are discussing American Crime Story, The Assassination of Gianni Versace, although once again, it's unclear to me when it comes to this show, which side of the colon, which part of the title is on.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. It's American Crime Story Season 2. That's what you need to know. It will be premiering as you're listening to this tonight, Wednesday, 17th. Here is the case synopsis in case, as I really wasn't, you have forgotten the particulars of this crime. On July 16th, 1997, more of this date in a moment, Gianni Versace was murdered on the steps of his Miami home by Andrew Cunanan, the fifth but not last in the string of deaths for which Cunanan was responsible, as Cunanan took his own life a week later, leaving law enforcement, grieving families, and a curious public grasping for answers. American Crime Story's second season attempts to confront the question of why, but the central problem in this narrative is that when it comes to sociopaths, that is the why. My own why, just as a sidebar, concerns that date and why so much horrible shit was happening on or near it in the 90s. TWA 800 exploded in the early morning of July 17th, 1996. JFK Jr.'s plane went down on the 16th of July in 1999. And let's not forget the killing that made my hometown the manslaughter capital of Union County, New Jersey in 2010. These two dates are respectively my brother's anniversary and my dad's birthday. Would it, universe? Anyway, cheery trivia. Not trivial at all. The contributions of my wife, Tara Ariano. Tara, did you know anything about this case aside from like maybe leafing through a Vanity Fair about it 20 years ago or not even that?
I mean, I was alive when it happened. I remember when it happened. But there's a moment when right at the beginning of the episode, Gianni, as part of his morning routine, goes down to the news cafe, which, by the way, was such a pleasant, like, just that aspect of his morning, like, just walking down to the newsstand and buying a shitload of magazines, like, that is heaven. Like, it's so simple, but it's great. But anyway, he buys a Vanity Fair with Diana on the cover, and I couldn't remember which one of them had been killed first. It was him. She was still alive at this
point. It was. She died on my brother's birthday. Like I said.
Yeah. I remembered that it was in August. Yes. I didn't remember it was your brother's birthday. I remembered the outlines of it, but I knew Andrew Cunanan was dead, but I didn't recall that he had killed himself or if he died in prison or was executed. Like I'm very not knowledgeable about this case.
Yeah, I'm really not either. And the fact is there's only so much that you can know because he did elude law enforcement fairly successfully up to and including the end of his life. So
yeah.
The show, I have watched the first two episodes. You'll be able to find my recaps on previously.tv. And some pretty amazing visual aids on the Blotter Presents Twitter account at Blotter Presents. But the show seems quite preoccupied with making sure we understand that he's a compulsive liar and manipulator. To the extent of, in our next clip, having his friends, who he walks into their bedroom wearing just underwear and a shirt and climbs in bed with them and immediately starts lying. And they exchange like 15 car talk looks, especially the husband. So let's hear clip two, and then we can discuss why you called for that clip.
Yeah.
Guess who I'm at?
Andrew?
Guess. You have to guess. Johnny Versace?
Oh, no. What? Oh, my God. Tell me everything.
So
I just thought that was cute scene setting. I mean, I had it as an alt for the intro clip. I mean, there's not much to it, but that's Annalee Ashford as the female half of the couple who was in Masters of Sex and has been on Broadway a bunch. She's good, but I like at this point, we still don't know what his relationship is to these people. Like, I thought, is one of them his sibling? Like, it's a man and a woman. We don't know.
Yeah.
And all we know at this point is that he's a grifter, probably.
Yeah, we don't really find out. We find out later when she comes home and he's like in their walk-in closet trying on suits. And she's like, you could ask, but she doesn't seem that mad about it.
Well, and then she styles him.
Yeah. I mean, it was the mid-90s. He needed the help for sure. But yeah, mm-hmm. they get to, after a long opening sequence of Versace's morning routine, which was quite charming, score to that famous Albinoni piece. They get right mm-hmm. to the characterization of Andrew as a compulsive liar. As we heard up top, that guy who I think we heard in the intro clip who was trying to be his boyfriend had just had a line about, like, you know, I don't know who you're trying to be from day to day. Mm-hmm. Tell straight people you're straight and gay people you're gay. And he's, I mean, there's something about the term striver that is so useful, I find, even outside of Edith Wharton novels. And we hear a little bit about why when Andrew comes upon Gianni in the club. I think this is in 1990. Here's clip three.
Signore Versace, buonasera.
This is my friend Andrew.
Hi.
Last night a DJ saved my life.
Good to see you in San Francisco.
Last night a DJ saved my life.
Thank you.
From a Last night a DJ saved my life.
I'm excited to see the opera. I think it's time we had a contemporary designer working.
Have we met before?
Yes. Lago di Como. Garden party at your residence. I was by the shore admiring your view and we exchanged a few words. You were most gracious. Of course, I remember it, but for you to remember it, it's very flattering.
they really get a lot done in this clip. First of all, to show how expert Andrew is at manipulating conversations so that people are kind of like, I mean, he doesn't remember it. It's not flattering. Versace wants him to go away. But he does manage to turn it, even though he's very awkward. And I was cringing throughout this scene. Not only the writing of this kind of striving personality, but also Darren Criss as Andrew Cunanan is outstanding at pitching that just perfectly. This sort of like overly familiar with famous people kind of grifter.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch Glee? I don't remember.
I had already checked out by the time he came, I think.
Yeah, that's the like log line on him in most of the reviews. I did not watch Glee at all, but he's great.
He's really good. There's also a funny moment in the second episode, which I watched as well, where he's singing along really loud to Gloria in the car. And badly, which I always think it's funny when people who can actors who can sing for real, like, fake like they can't. I mean, he's very convincing. I think you have to be a really good singer to be that bad. Like, he's totally tone deaf in this moment. And actually that dovetails with the soundtrack on this whole series of at least the two episodes that we've seen so far is great. There's just awesome, perfectly timed, nostalgic hits like Been Around the World by Lisa Stansfield in the first episode, Gloria, and Easy Lover, Never Creepier in the second one.
Oh God, it's so creepy.
Yeah.
Featuring the almost unrecognizable and extremely pitiable Max Greenfield. I mean, he still looks great. I still would, but it's really a sad setup. I almost didn't know it was him.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, who is this actor? He really looks like Max. Oh yeah.
Yeah. But I think Chris is also very good at selling the grift parts of the story. And I think the filmmakers enjoy like peppering in just the, you know, the elements of how he gets it done, you know, like, no, he knows as in the clip we just heard, he knows things about Gianni Versace's property. Whatever is going on with this couple is some kind of long-term, like, you know, mooch plus, we're not sure. And when he goes to the opera, he just like, you know, casually grabs up a pair of opera glasses so that he can pass. Like he knows what he's definitely like weird and cringy, but he knows what he's doing. Like it's clear how he's gotten this far doing this.
Yeah. Apparently Kunanen was extremely bright. Had mm-hmm. a tested IQ in the upper 140s. I'm not sure that's necessarily a prerequisite for being a grifter. But he's also very smart about presenting himself, I think, as a little awkward and mm-hmm. not threatening. Like, he definitely doesn't seem like he's dangerous. He's just annoying. And, like, he has an excellent sense, which he would have to do this successfully, of right. how to make the grifty feel safe.
Right. Feel safe and also want to like reach out to him to make him feel comfortable. You
yeah.
know? Like it's that dark side of emotional intelligence of like how you twist someone into meeting you halfway or more, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
By appealing to their empathy for you and your weirdness.
Yeah. There's also a chameleonic aspect. As we mentioned before, this guy who I think wants to be Kunanen's boyfriend and I'm sure is pretty relieved that didn't work out for him in his unbelievably horrible sweater.
Yeah.
The show's take on it is that there's a self-loathing to Kunanen about his sexuality, but it's not entirely clear to me that that's not just another aspect of himself that he put out for certain people so that they would take him into their confidence. It's hard mm-hmm. to say. Well, anyway, let's hear clip 4, which is when he's talking to this couple whose relationship with him remains undefined and being extremely grand, but also not so unbigoted in clip 4.
Velvet upholstery. It's very strict policy on not approaching celebrities, which I would never do, by the way. Ugh, so tacky. So I'm talking with my friend, and then this agreeable looking man comes up to me and he introduces himself as Versace. Yes. I say to him, honey, if you're Versace, I'm Coco Chanel.
No, you didn't.
I said that. It's so embarrassing. And I had to make it up to him later when he actually did establish himself as, you know, Versace. I'm not really a fan of his clothes, per se. He's just so bright. It's too much. But they say that Armani designs clothes for wives. I think that Versace designs clothes for sluts. And don't you look at me like that. Please, I know the score. A lecherous fag on the prowl.
I didn't know he was gay.
Hey, faggot is not a nice word.
Not nice when it's said by the wrong person, but what are we supposed to call them? Homosexuals? Sounds so scientific. Anyway, I don't have a problem with it. It doesn't bother me at all, which is why I agreed.
Wait, you agreed to what?
Oh, didn't I say? He invited me to the opera.
Yeah, this is such an odd like thing that Kunanen is doing here, which is that like this is the most queenly that he's been on screen, and then he's using the F word. So I think the show feels a certain way about that. Would you agree?
About what? I'm sorry.
About his self-loathing.
Oh yeah, alleged. I mean it's right. This was at this point, I was still trying to figure out what their relationship was. Cause at first, like when you see him crawl into bed with them, I thought, okay, the three of them are a couple. You right. know what I mean? Like that's their arrangement. And so when he starts talking about them, you know, like he's already not convincing because he's referred to, you know, when he's recapping the story, he's like, oh, honey, like, okay, that's not something straight men say. And we all yeah. know that. So I don't know what the point of this posture is. Like it doesn't seem to be for the guy's benefit because he doesn't seem to be buying it either. So I don't know. I thought it was just I assumed the whole story was just part of whatever grift he's trying to put over.
I guess. It's just interesting. And definitely there's, I hope we see more of this couple, because there's definitely a couple of looks exchanged between the two of them while he's being so grand about this meeting, which of course did not occur the way he said it did. But then on the other hand, she seems like she wants to believe, and the guy's like, whatever, like he's your project kind of. So I'm interested to see if we learn more about them. But he's definitely an expert at talking the talk when it comes to the rich and fancy. We have no real reason for this next clip, except that my guest is living in Hawaii. Clip 5.
Who knew that there was so much money to be made in pineapples?
Not me. I mean, it sounds like almost everything.
I don't think
everything.
There is anymore.
Yeah. I mean, is your last name Dole? Because that seems a little off, but it's, I don't know. That's at the end of kind of a backstage opera date that he and Versace are having with champagne. And he's just been going on and on about how important his father is, which I assume was also lies. And they're just making very sure to underline that he is basically incapable of telling the truth.
Right. I'll set up our next clip, which is I have in my notes LOL Luke Wheeler.
Me too.
Will Chase, ex of Nashville and Smash, is one of the cops investigating the case. The other is Stan from Mad Men. I forget.
Yes, Gasp Stan is, I believe, FBI, and Luke Wheeler is local PD.
Yeah. So they established these two characters. There's also a moment where someone who's happens to have snapped a Polaroid of the corpse is like starts trying to auction it off at the crime scene, which was, I just have in my notes, it's funny to think of a time when a photo could be rare. Like if you could get close enough to a corpse at this point, you would have 100,000 photos of this, like, because everyone would have cameras on them.
Yeah. Like there's a whole sequence where he has to run back to his car and get a Polaroid camera, and he's wearing like jams and a fanny pack. It's just so 97. It's almost painful, but it's pretty great. Like they definitely made sure to nail down all the corners on the production design. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes. So somewhere in the interim, we get our first shot of Penelope Cruz as Donatella. And I understand why the Versace family is mad about the existence of this miniseries. But if I were Donatella, I would be very flattered if Penelope Cruz played me. Like, I think she's the best thing about it so far.
Yeah, we will. We'll get to her in a second. And then I want to talk about whether you think she should have gotten some help with the nose. But anyway, continue setting up clip 6. Sorry to interrupt.
Right. So Will Chase. This is just a clip that play clip 6 and then we can talk about it.
OK,
this is Will Chase's his cop talking to Versace's ex.
Your partners.
Partner. His companion. I loved him.
So you were bringing back other men for him? You were having sex with them too, with him there?
Sometimes.
Sometimes he wouldn't join in?
No, not always. Sometimes, it was whatever he wanted.
These other men, did they consider themselves to be Versace's partner, too?
No.
You see why I'm confused? What's the difference?
15 years. I lived with Jennifer 15 years. That is the difference.
Okay. That's a good length of time. Could you give us their names, these other men?
Okay, I can find out.
Were they paid?
Well, yes, no. Most of the time, they just fell for him. He was a genius. He cast a spell.
Were you paid?
Was I paid? To love him, was I paid to love him?
I'm sorry. I know you're upset, but this is new to me. I'm just trying to get everything clear. Don't want to make presumptions.
Yes, and I'm trying to help.
Yeah, I assume that the police department has had some sensitivity training in South Beach since this time, but this is like a long way to go for the PSA on like what is and is not fidelity in a gay relationship. Like, we get it.
Yeah. And my notes were like, in Miami, really? Like, did you just get here? Yeah. that did feel a little clunky. What did you think of, what do you think of Ricky's performance so far?
I actually think he's really good. I think I forgot to say up top, his character's name is Antonio. Character. His guy is Antonio. I wasn't expecting much from him, but I think he's very convincing and good.
Yeah, I agree. I'm interested to see how they get into, I think Versace left Antonio a decent amount of responsibility in the company in his will, and then Donatella was not having it. And it's clear, even from the first couple of episodes, that she is not having him at all, period.
Yep.
And blames him, at least in part, for what happened. But her performance is, like, I am loving it so far. I don't know that much about Donatella Versace, but I feel like there's a certain way she has of walking. But like just a woman who spends her life in 4-inch heels minimum, and that sort of ouchy walk that Donatella has, she has that down for sure. But do you think she should have gotten a fake nose or no?
I think a fake, I can understand that impulse, but I think it would be very distracting. It would be like the Nicole Kidman, Virginia Woolf nose. I mean, fine, she got an Oscar, but like,
I was going to say the Steve Carell DuPont nose, but yes, same.
Yeah.
Same block.
I think it would tip it over into like, into making it more caricature-y. Although, you know, like there's the line between this and American Horror Story, I would say, is already pretty blurry. There's that scene in the second episode where Andrew has picked up a victim, you know, slash trick, and there's some duct taping of a head and some dancing. And it's like, you know, that struck me as very over the top, but you know, whatever. Anyway, in terms of the nose, I think it would be distracting.
Yeah, so I agree. Why they didn't. In the first episode, I felt like, you know, she should have, like, if that were offered to her, she should have taken it. But by the second episode, I really felt like she was inhabiting the person and didn't need the nose. Like, she definitely has that way of, like, the way she puts her hair over her shoulder, like it's just one solid block of blondness. She has that down. And
The hair and the voice, I think, are getting enough of the job done. So I wasn't that distracted from the verisimilitude of.
Yeah, no, I wasn't either. Let's hear the voice in our final clip in this section.
As you know, my brother, who I love very much, is dead. And now the press and the police will rake through his life. Every rumor, every indiscretion. They'll judge the killer, yes, but they'll judge the victim too. But first people weep, then they whisper.
She still has her own kind of slushy English pronunciation, but it's working for me. I'm finding her very compelling in the role so far.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, like I said, I get why the family is not going to be on board with something like this. Like, no matter what it is, they couldn't possibly support it, like, which I get. You know, there's a greater conversation to be had about the ethics and morality of true crime fictionalized in this way, but like, now is not the time to have it. You're sick.
Well, but I mean, it's a conversation that I have in almost every episode that,
right,
from the standpoint of the family, like, this is an exploration of the murderer. Because otherwise, then it's just like a sort of biopic, which I would still watch, but
yeah,
this is the line that you're always kind of on watching and making true crime, is respect for the victim and their families. And it's not easy to do. And especially in the case of this little psycho shit brick, basically, I could see the Versace family being like, why? Like, who cares why he did what he did?
Right.
He sucks.
Right. And why are you glorifying him after death by like making him the centerpiece of this project and casting this young, cute actor to play him. Like, you know, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, legitimate objection, but unfortunately there's nothing to be gained by their objecting either, which is no. Unfortunate. Did you read the book that this is
no.
based on? No, I haven't either.
No, but I know, I mean, Maureen Orth is the author and she's well-regarded. Like, I have no reason to think that it's not well-researched and,
yeah.
and credible.
Yeah, but I think there are some flights of fancy here, and I think they are definitely trying to focus on, you know, what might make Cunanan not sympathetic exactly, but at least explicable, and I'm not sure that's possible to do. I take right. it you're in for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You are, obviously. You have to be.
Yes.
We're making you.
Yeah, I certainly am. But it is a very recapable show because there are a lot of musical montages, and
yes.
this brother appreciates that.
Yeah, there's a lot of visuals. I thought that, too, while I was watching it. Like, it could be worse. You should also, if you're guess you have your plugs at the end. I won't preempt your plugs.
My plug is that you can find my recaps of every episode of this fine program on previously.tv. There will be visual aids. You will understand why Tara IM'd me all, hey, Versace's decor, take it down a notch.
Yeah.
No. He had just had all the notches. He decorated mm-hmm. all the notches.
Yes. But you have another plug, which you forgot, which is you're also going to be reading your recaps as part of our Epic Old School Recap podcast.
That is correct.
For those who prefer to hear rather than read.
Yeah. So if you would like to take my beautiful baritone with you in the car, I assure you I will not be using a Chef Boyardee accent to replicate the dialogue. Before we get to your plugs, though, I have a quick question, and that is this. Did Edgar Ramirez... Right. Not Rodriguez, yeah. Ramirez. In yes. the role of Gianni Versace, look and sound to you like Enrico Colantoni, or is that just me?
Yeah, of course. No, he did.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt to the point where I felt bad for Enrico Colantoni. Like, I know why he didn't book this part. It's, you know, it's above his prestige grade, I guess. But I think he could have done it.
Yeah, I agree. And kind of wish he had.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for confirming that for me. And now, where can listeners find you?
Well, on the other podcasts that you and I do together, which are Extra Hot Great. And again, with this on Beverly Hills 90210 and as well on our Married at First Sight cast, Married at First Sight podcast, Bride and Doom. And basically go to previously.tv. It's all there.
A little something different for the cold case section this week. You may remember that back in episode 38, Dan Patrick Brady and I were not 100 on Bridekilla, but we were impressed by the reenactors for sure. One of them has foolishly agreed to chat with me for a few minutes about what it's like to work on these true crime shows. He played Rob McKernan on Bridekilla, and his name is Chad Beauchel. Hello, Chad. Thanks for the time.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. I, first of all, would like to note that we have something in common on our resumes. I see on your website that you have portrayed the Nittany Lion. Is this true?
I have. That's always a great thing, you know, when you're not doing it, but when you're in the suit having to do 100 one-arm push-ups, it changes your theory a little.
Yeah, I had a decidedly lower pressure mascot experience in high school. It's the old girl school, nobody else was tall enough to fit the costume. But yes, as a Emerita Chumley the Dragon, I hear ya. And I will also say that... Dear Kent Play School Athletics Department, please clean the costume. I'm almost positive that it was not cleaned from the 60s until I stepped into it, literally. So, yeah.
Yeah, I actually had them get a whole new costume because it was that old and that
bad.
Oh,
my God. Really?
Yeah. Oh,
But this is like, that's a big deal school. So, were there more than one of you, or was it just you?
Well, there's... Since Penn State is such a large university, there are different ones at different campuses so that the illusion stays true.
Okay.
So I was for the local campuses from the region where I live.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, that is not a crime. So we're going to have, nope. Yeah, we're going to have to focus.
No, but it is an alibi.
True enough. So yeah, we saw you in Bridekilla, as you well know. I see that you have a couple of forensic files on your CV as well. How did that come about? How did you come into these roles? Just the usual, was it an open call?
I actually decided a long time ago I wanted to see how many different ways I could die, and I'm up to five.
Okay.
No, it actually, believe it or not, started as just it started as just another job, looking for another acting job, which was through a casting notice through different casting websites where they say what projects are coming up. I took the first role in Forensic Files. We're probably going back at least a decade now. And I took it because it was recording locally to the Lehigh Valley.
Right. That's what I figured.
And it was a good way to start getting into acting because, as you know from watching crime reenactments, they don't always have the best caliber actors. So it's a good starting diving point, jumping off point.
Sure. And were you were reenacting in both those Forensic Files, or were you the body in one of those?
I was the body in some of them. I was a witness alibi to one of the crimes in another one where the perpetrator was making sure that he was definitely in the shower at 3 a.m. as my girlfriend and I were watching TV. So I've also been ejected from a car where that wasn't the homicide that they were actually investigating. It was just backstory to the actual crime of when the woman that got in the car accident was murdered herself.
Okay. Wow. I was also ejected from a car. It's not something that most of us get to say when we're talking about our work. That's quite amazing.
Yeah. It's,
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's amazing the weird things you get to say.
Yeah, I'll bet. Are there particular challenges, would you say, to doing a scene that you know is likely going to be playing under a voiceover? Are you directed in any particular way when it comes to that? Because certainly the Forensic Files voiceover guy was like this, you know, legend into his 90s.
Yes.
And so is that different from just sort of a like standard gig? Are you asked to go bigger to like indicate more or not really?
It really is dependent upon the director himself or herself. I've worked with some directors that are highly motivated to get you guys to have the actors to have a lot more energy and have it look better than it did in real life. I always hear the I always hear the term from casting that we cast up. We want to make the actors look better than the real people in real life. And so it really depends on the perspective of the director. In the Bridekilla episode, they wanted us to be as into it and as if we were really having that fight, as if we were really having those moments, and sell them as much as we could without being too over the top, because we were actually trying to stay very true to the information that was provided to us from the research team and the lawyers and everybody else that says what you can and cannot say.
Right. Well, that sort of leads into my next question. I mean, as you know, I was quite impressed with, a lot of reenactments are very big, but this one felt very true to me in a way that they usually don't, like some of the little asides that like your later dude when you're leaving the party was like, yeah, that feels like what would actually happen when someone has a fight like this. And is leaving the party.
Being a married gentleman myself, I have never said anything like that. So there's definitely no real life there.
Yeah, well, as a controlling married lady myself, there was some truth to that, I would say. And I think my husband would agree. He found it very funny.
I have to definitely give credit to my co-star, Amber. She was amazing to work with. And that really does help sell the recreation moments as well. When you have two people that are willing to just dive right in and go for it. And I can be honest, in between some of the takes, I had to look at her and go, are Amber and Chad okay? Or is this still Rob and Colleen? So
what is Amber's last name?
Actually, I don't know if she wanted me to share her name yet. So I was actually waiting to hear back from her. And I didn't get a chance to before we are recording here today.
All right. Well, then we will leave it in mystery for now.
Dun, dun, dun.
But Amber Doe, I guess, absolutely not vain in that performance, because it's really not flattering. And especially in some of these recreations, like, you know, these are murders and it's kind of a lot. So I wanted to ask you how you feel with, you know, filming these shows in terms of, I guess, responsibility, for lack of a better term, to the real person that you may be portraying.
That responsibility is actually much more than I ever imagined it would be. When I first started out, it very much felt like just another acting job. Let's go find a character. Let's go find their emotions. Let's go find what makes it watchable. And then you start researching and you start developing your own bias. You start developing your own thoughts, your own feelings towards the tragic situation that happened. And
right.
It really does start to be in the back of your mind as you're performing to say, wow, I need to do this character justice, because it's not a fictional character. It's this real person that had real tragedy in their lives on everyone that's involved, from the suspect to the victim.
Sure. And the families and so on. So you do your own research on these, or you wait to see what the sides say to do, or a little of both?
The process is kind of tough. When you first get called in for an audition for something like this, they give you a very small synopsis and they try to keep it as vague as possible, because in the TV world, the idea is where you have your money. So they don't want actors going out and just saying, oh, we're doing this case XYZ. But once they like you and they bring you in for a callback, or they offer you the role, they typically then tell you what case it is. And a quick Google search brings up a plethora of information for pretty much any of the cases. And you can do as much or as little research as you feel necessary as an actor to be prepared for when you get to the set, when the director says, all right, this is the part where blah, blah, blah happened. You at least have some background on what that blah, blah, blah was.
Sure.
In order to do it.
But do you, I mean, I would think for myself, like, that there might be a point where there's like too much, like you could know too much and sort of feel constricted, I guess. Do you find that, or you just sort of try to know as much as you can to find the character?
Actually, in the instance that we just watched through Bridekilla, in doing my research, I was actually very biased towards her being the crazy person that the show portrays.
Right.
But that, believe it or not, made me dig farther to find out more about, because it always takes two. So it made me want to find out more about what my role was in and Rob's role, rather, in creating the outcome that happened.
Right. Well, and strangely, 48 Hours just aired an episode that dealt primarily with this case a couple weeks ago, called The Evidence Room. And it was quite a different take, quite a different point of view. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, they were like creating a digital reenactment. So that was interesting. Is it more pressure to play the victim of a crime, or sort of no difference?
To me, it's really no different. It's finding the motivation on why people do what they do.
Right.
And you know, anytime in real life, when you go to your favorite coffee store and get your standard predictable coffee every morning, we all have motivation for that. We all have either a drive or something that's very underlined to what every one of our actions is. So you extrapolate that out to murder, and it becomes much more highly motivated.
Right, sure.
So it's tough whether you're going to recreate murdering someone or recreate being the victim of murder. You still have to put a lot of thought into what the underlying demons are on both avenues.
Sure. How you got there. Well, your Twitter bio, which is hilarious, mentions that we can see your ear, elbow, profile, and corpse on many shows and films. Exactly how does one get cast as the body?
A lot of it comes down to type. When we're reenacting real cases, we have real people to go off of. So, for instance, if they're looking for a 5'0", 100-pound guy, I won't fit because I'm 6'2", 270. Where,
right.
So it does come down a lot to type on that. There are a lot of different shows that just need a body and there's no specific description for it. And then right. you can just apply. And applying to be a dead body is always one of those weird things you get to tell people. Hey, yeah, I applied to be sit, you know, with fake blood and guts on me for the next 6 hours in the freezing cold weather. You know, just to get paid. It's like, I'll look at you a little funny sometimes.
And people are like, so what are you doing? You're like, I'm working on not blinking.
Yeah. I'm holding my breath right now. Thank you. This is training for my job.
Oh boy. Certified non-blinker. Is that the hardest? Is that the hardest thing about playing dead? Or is it sometimes the environmental issues? Like if you're out in the cold?
Well, I can actually tell you that answer just changed recently.
Oh, yeah?
Because, oh, yeah, recently it was my worst, most uncomfortable moment up until recent date was it was 4 a.m, 38 degrees out. I was covered in fake blood, laying down on a hill with my feet much higher than my head in elevation.
Okay.
And laying dead. So don't shiver. Don't breathe because we can see your breath.
Uh-huh.
And don't pass out because all the blood's rushing to your head.
Okay.
So that was a tough one.
But now that's number two?
That is now number two. The new number one is actually when we were filming Bride Killa. I was laying there in makeup's doing the bullet holes because you obviously need the blood to run the correct direction. So you have to apply the makeup in the position that the body really was.
Sure.
And it was hot where we were filming. So all of the crew was walking around in cargo shorts. And since I was in the middle of the hallway doing a great job of blocking traffic, everyone's standing over my head in their very baggy cargo shorts. So, yeah, let's lay here while makeup's doing stuff to you and have a view of, well, what religion someone is.
Plus, This murder took place on New Year's Eve in Ohio, so you're dressed for that.
Yes.
And it's pretty toasty. Wow. Yeah, that's... So now on top of don't blink, don't breathe, don't sweat, is don't giggle.
And don't dream. Like, don't fall asleep with that as your last vision in your head.
Yeah, that's... good pro tip.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are your body aspirations here? Are you hoping to be the body that someone trips over while getting in a couple argument in the pre-credit sequence on SVU? Because I feel like that's always the goal.
Believe it or not, it's actually a joke between my friends and I that if we're assuming that my acting death career is like a cat that I have 9 death scenes and I'm through 5 of them now.
Okay.
And each one's gotten more magnificent. So we figure by the time 9 rolls around, I'll be the guy staying back on the asteroid to detonate the nuke to save all of mankind.
Okay. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, it sounds grander that way.
Oh, sure. And I mean, talk about going out with a bang. Seriously. That's how you do it. All right. I think that's all the questions I have. Where can listeners find you next/ in upcoming projects? Anything to plug?
At the moment, I do not have anything to plug. I can just say, please watch Bride Killa and comment, and, you know, make fun as you will. And You can find me on social media at Beauchel the Actor. And that's pretty much where you can find me at the moment.
All right. Thank you so much for allowing yourself to be found and for answering my somewhat silly questions about your life in crime reenactments. And definitely keep us posted on anything that's coming up for you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was my pleasure to enjoy and interact with your quote-unquote silly questions.
Oh.
And I appreciate your hospitality.
Oh, thanks very much. I hope you'll come back and join us again sometime when you make the Dick Wolf big time.
We will definitely have to do that.
Yeah, and if the asteroid thing happens, absolutely tweet at us. We're here for it.
Oh, no worries. Next time I die, you will be one of the first to know.
And on that note, thanks very much, Chad.
Thank you.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.